You're listening to the Nitty Gritty Podcast with Jen Gall and Shona Hutchings, where they discuss the nitty gritty of creative entrepreneurship. This is episode 7 of the Nitty Gritty Podcast, and today we're going to talk about some tools that we're using.
And I'm so excited for this episode. I'm totally nerding out here because these tools and apps and programs just make my life so much easier, and I'm sure they make your life so much easier. Mm-hmm. But it's like my favorite thing to talk about.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to start off with apps, I think, because they're the easiest to access on our phones. I would say most of them, if not all of them, in this little section are free.
Yeah, for the most part. Or at least they have a free version.
Or they have a free version, yeah.
That you can use and most of the time work just as well. I'm going to start off with a tool that myself and my team use daily. It's called Toggle. And the idea behind it is that you track your time, and it is so user-friendly. There's an app and a desktop or like a computer version of it. So it's honestly like the first thing I log into the moment I start work, the moment I'm traveling somewhere. It lets you categorize based on clients, based on projects. You can add time. You can do it. Oh my gosh. Like
manually, yeah.
It's probably one of my favorite tools, and it is free. We don't pay for it.
Yeah, it's basically a time tracker app.
Yeah, but it's just such an easy way to track whether you do hourly or even just, like, we use Toggle on, like, a higher level scale in the sense that, like, we download what we've been working on that month, and we can see where we've been using our time and what we've been using our time, if it's been efficient or if it hasn't been, or if there's anywhere that we can make our day-to-day better. Mm-hmm. Just based on the hours that we're tracking. So it's really, really cool. I know last month we spent like something like 25 hours on the blog, and I was like, damn, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So something that we had to just consider, and just being able to look at that was kind of amazing. So
Yeah, that's awesome, because you can reflect and you can determine what you need to change for the next month. Yeah, okay, the next one that we have here in our list that we both use is a program called Later. And it's basically a social media scheduling app. Mm-hmm. So, like, sorry, guys, realistically, we don't live post. I think, like, there's a couple times I do, but I work during the day. I don't have time to, like, go on my social media and live post for you guys. So if I'm live posting, I'm making a story. But my feed is through Later. And I am coming up with the captions and the photos and stuff, but, like, and I'm determining where I want them to go, but... Yeah, it's planned.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Later basically, I think Later is really, really great for Instagram. Mm-hmm. We also use it for Twitter and for Pinterest ourselves. Anything Facebook related, we do on Facebook, just because that's the best way in terms of like optimization for Facebook posts. But we use Later for all of our clients as well. It's how we manage all of our clients' social media. But it's free, up to 30 posts a month. For those of you who just don't have the capacity to pay for an app just to manage your Instagram, for example, if you do pay, I want to say it's like $9 American a month, if you do month by month, and
depending on how many social feeds you manage and how many posts you want, because I think it's like 250 posts a month for $9.99 a month or something like that, but two feeds,
yeah, so like, yeah. You mean
like two different accounts.
Oh, yeah,
so like,
yeah.
You can have like two different Instagram accounts on the $9.99 a month.
And I think it's just one.
More. Is it just one?
It's just one, but you can have like, you can have like Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Pinterest.
Right, right, yeah. Okay.
But in terms of like the number, so if you have like two Facebook accounts that you're managing, that's it's by like what they consider as like a user.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then after that, it just gets progressively more expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, depending on what you need.
Although, to be fair, I think we have something like 9 or 10, mm-hmm. and we're paying under $100.
Yeah.
So it's not bad. No. It's just you have to really consider it. But if you're like a solo entrepreneur and you're just managing your own Instagram accounts, it's a great option.
Yeah, even 30 a month is like one a day.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Is more than enough. Yeah. For sure.
The only other difference that I found between like the paid version and the free version is once you get to like the pro version, it will give you like hashtag suggestions. So
yes, and if you want to auto post,
and auto post.
So yeah. Auto posting is this like a miraculous, magical thing that if you can't, like, so for example, if you're an entrepreneur, maybe you're at a photo shoot or you're in a meeting all day and you don't have the capacity to actually get the notification on your phone saying, hey, time to post this, it will automatically post it to Instagram for you. Mm-hmm. That is only a paid version.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I should mention about the auto post is like proofread your comments.
Oh, yeah.
Or I mean your captions before you select the auto post because you don't want to go back in and change them after.
No.
Yeah.
No, but it's a great program. I highly recommend just playing with it because it's magical.
Okay, the next one that I use, mostly just, I used to use it a lot actually for like photo editing before like Lightroom app kind of became a free version on phones, right. But is VSCO or VSCO Cam, and I use it now like really only to put borders on because I do all of my like edits either on the computer or through the next app that I'm going to talk about, but yeah, VSCO Cam, and it's free to download, and there's a bunch of presets that you can get that are free, but if you want to get additional presets, then you have to pay some money to get them, but you can also go to, like, there's, like, these slider bars that you can play with, like, exposure of photographs or the contrast, etc. So I think it's a great app. A lot of people use it, and there's actually, like, an online community based through VSCO Cam if you wanted to get in on that.
Oh, book. Is that why there's, like, a hashtag for them?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I don't use that. I don't think I've ever used that app.
Oh, really? Yeah, a lot of people in, like, photography, like, use it.
Yeah.
Because you can create your own presets and stuff through it, too. And some of the presets that are on there are, like, creatives who have made them and sold them.
Very cool.
Through VSCO. The next one's Lightroom, which is,
like, which is why I've never used the VSCO.
Yeah, well, Lightroom didn't used to be free. You used to have to be you had to have an Adobe, like, login in order to use it. But now there's a free version of it.
Which is actually, by the way, very good.
Yeah, it's probably the best photo app you can get on your phone.
And it's a really good way to familiarize yourself with the different terms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whether it's exposure or contrast or, I mean, those are, like, probably the
saturation, vibrance.
Yeah,
like,
I'm like, ugh.
Sharpness, clarity, they're all different. Yeah.
But it's a really great way to become familiarized with all those terms and kind of what that does to your photos.
It's also like one of the apps that people have been coming out with a lot of presets. So like if you want to buy a preset, there's going to be a lot of like photographers or people out there that are creating like presets for Lightroom. So you're not going to see a lot of like presets for any other photo editing app because Lightroom is the one that photographers use. So that will be the one that they'll be creating their presets on. So I know there's a lot of like bloggers that have made them. And then like, I'm pretty sure Chris Howe, one of the photographers in Toronto, has one. Lizzie Pierce has one. And Pixel and Lens Visual Club, or Becky and Chris have come out with one, I think. And then
come out with one.
I've been thinking about it, but like personally, I don't really use presets, right? Because I edit every single photo individually. So I mean, I could if you guys want me to do presets, and I think I actually did a vote on this, and people said yes already, and I just haven't done it. But if you want me to do a preset, let me know, either somewhere in a comment or you can DM me or whatever. If you want me to come out with a preset and you want your photos to be really bright white, I will try and make that happen for you.
I think like everybody wants. The next two programs that we use kind of go hand in hand together, and they're the ones we use for our podcast. So the main program we use is called Anchor, and it is what we use to kind of upload our finished and edited version of the podcast, and then it gets pushed out to all the different platforms. So any app that you use, our podcast will be on. It's been pushed out all through Anchor. Automatically, so it saves a ton of time.
Yeah, because you don't have to individually post on like iTunes, on Spotify, on
you just upload it right to Anchor, and it magically pushes it out for us. So it's been super, super helpful. And then we also use Headliner, which is one of those like funky free apps. Oh, Anchor is free too. We're not paying for that, but Headliner is a really cool program that you can essentially create like an image and then put
the sound wave of
the audio right over top of the image, like you've ever seen like in the stories or in like an Instagram, even wherever you see a photo on social media and you see like you can listen to it as a video. Headliner is essentially the app that's good for that. Or is there an app for that? There's gotta be.
Headliner? I don't know. I've only done it.
I've only ever done it on our desk, like on our computers.
It's like you go to headliner.com or whatever it is, and you can upload your audio and then pick what you want your wave to look like, what you want your photo to look like.
I'm sure that there is an app for that, but we just do it on our computers.
Yeah,
it's just easier.
Yeah.
Everything's on the computer, so it just makes sense to just use it.
Mm-hmm. Unfold. I haven't really used this one a lot. I know that you said, well, basically you were the one who put it on our list. What it is, if you guys haven't used it, is it's a way to create kind of like a template for your stories. So if you've seen, like people with photos with like borders around them and like this nice script writing and that kind of stuff, you can pick certain colors. And
yeah, it is pretty cool. It's free, again, very similar to VSCO, where you can pay to have certain designs or certain layouts or templates. But it's kind of a cool program. It just kind of makes your stories look a bit more professional. But at the end of the day, it's just another app. Mm-hmm. It's not necessary. It's just sometimes kind of cool to play around with. Oh, man. Okay, so I wish... If anyone has ever seen this on their iPhone, and it is like a thing on the iPhone, tell me how to do this. But it's where you can record your actual screen on your phone. I have an app for it. It's called Record It. It's something that you can do on an Android. It's just like it's on the phone. It's built into the platform, whereas like with iPhone, I have yet to be able to find it. I should probably just ask Siri if it's if it's on there. But if anyone has ever found it or know of a great app for it, I'd love to know. But right now I'm using Record It, and it seems to work quite well. So that's what I do. Essentially, what the main reason I use that, and you can actually go right onto my Instagram and look at my podcast highlights, because whenever I'm showing you me like clicking on my phone to something, it will record your screen. Similar how you would use like Quick Player or something on your computer to record your whole computer screen. Oh, I should add that.
Yeah. Okay, so if you have an Android and you want to figure out how to do this, basically, I have a Samsung S9, so it might be different for like where you're going to find this on other Androids, but if you go and you pull down your screen from the top where you're going to see your Wi-Fi and your Bluetooth connection, whatever, usually there's like a performance mode or like a mode that your phone is in, and you can click on that and you can change it to like a game mode. So if you do have the Samsung S9 or if your Android allows you to do this, once you change it over, as soon as you kind of open an app, it will, in the bottom right corner of your screen, it will show like a record button. And basically you just press that record button and it starts recording your screen, and that's it.
Should I just ask Siri?
Right now? Yeah. Let's see what she says.
Hey Siri, is there a way for me to record the screen of my phone? That's not helpful. Thanks, Siri.
Best assistant ever. we have like on Android or on my Samsung anyways, we have like a Siri equivalent called Bixby.
Yeah.
But like he does nothing. I think he does do stuff, but I never use Siri when we had it anyways. So I just do everything myself.
I personally, okay, so I guess one of my apps I use the Siri quite often is because if I'm ever like timing something, I'll like, I love doing this. I'm like, hey Siri, can you set the timer for 30 seconds?
Your timer is set for 30 seconds.
It's like one of my favorite things to do, especially if it's like across the room and I needed to do it.
Oh yeah.
But that's like a useless thing.
Just so not.
Yeah. Okay, the last one is voice recorder, which really could be any voice recorder. They're usually built into your phone already, so you don't usually have to get an app for it. And the reason that we use it last, actually, was we were in a meeting, we were both kind of tired, and we just wanted to make sure we weren't going to forget what was said in the meeting. So although, like, we take notes usually, like, on the computer or on Google or whatever we're using, it's also nice to just have kind of, like, a recording of what happened so you can listen to it later, so...
I also use my voice recorder. I'll have sometimes I'll be playing, like I'll have it recording in my car, and I'll actually like talk through ideas. I don't know, some people have really good ideas when they're in the shower. Mm-hmm. I have really good ideas when I'm driving. So if I'm thinking or kind of working through a problem, or maybe I'm even just talking through what I have to get done that day, I'll actually have my voice recorder on, and then just it's sitting kind of where my phone sits, like stationary on either on my the side beside me, or it's like on my, I don't know, like the phone holder that I have sitting on my dashboard. And it will record it for me so that I can actually go back and listen to it when I get to the office.
Right. Okay, on to photography and design apps. So, Adobe Creative Cloud.
Oh, it's my heaven.
Oh, yeah. If you do anything in photography and design, you're usually using some Adobe programs. So, two of the programs that I primarily use for photography are Lightroom and Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say when I do my photo editing, that 97% of it, maybe even 98% of it is done in Lightroom, and like the 3 or 2% that's left over is done in Photoshop. Did I say that backwards?
No.
Okay, good. Never mind. Anyways, can you guys tell that I'm tired and why we record things? okay, so Lightroom, the difference between the two programs, if you don't have the DNG converter or the Adobe Camera Raw plugin for Photoshop, which most Photoshop just comes with now, the difference between the two is when you import a photo into Lightroom, you do something called lossless editing. And basically what that means is like when you're editing the photo, you don't get any like depletion in photo quality, but when you, if you were to do that in a lossy program, which Photoshop is technically if you're not using ACR editing, then you're actually depleting some of the photo quality. So most photographers want to make sure that they're doing their editing in a lossless program because they don't want to get rid of any of the detail or the photo quality. And it actually makes it a lot easier to revert back to your original if you're using a lossless program, just because it usually will save the information. Whereas with like Photoshop, if you want to go back to your original, you either have to duplicate it and do all of your editing in a separate layer, or you have to like press Control Z a bunch of times and like undo all of your edits. Whereas with Lightroom, it's like one click. If you're like, oh, I really don't like that, I want to start over, it's like there's a reset button. So in terms of like the difference between the two apps as well, if you're using Lightroom, and I mean, this is like a whole lesson on how to like make folders and name files and import based on catalogs and all of these things, but I would do most of the like lighting, contrast, like any of the brightness, exposure, saturation, the blacks, the whites, like any of that kind of stuff, even like lens distortion if I'm playing with that, or I don't really use vignetting, but there's an option for those kind of things too. If you're doing any of that, moving the skew of the photo, like let's say like your verticals are off or your horizontal, you want to rotate, I do all of that in Lightroom.
Yeah.
The only things that I really do, and I even do like gradient filters, and I would say like most of my spot touch-ups probably in Lightroom. The only thing I would do in Photoshop is like blending. So like if I need to like soften something, or if I need to like add color or something, then I'll do it in Photoshop. But really Photoshop is for like really manipulating images to like change its original, whereas Lightroom is to like enhance the original.
Yeah. I know we like primarily live in InDesign and Illustrator for sure. InDesign we would probably be using more for creating like ebooks or projects with like a lot of pages. So whether it's a magazine or contracts or whatever it is that we're creating, InDesign is really great for using multiple pages. You can also use it to create like designs, logos, branding, any of that kind of thing. But I honestly think that those are really best for Illustrator. Realistically, both programs can create like vector files, but at the end of the day, I really think the biggest difference is just Illustrator, I think, has more of that capability in like the branding and like the logo creation and the design creation, whereas like although you can do that in InDesign, InDesign really is meant for like
print
multiple pages,
longer
drafts of things. So both, I wouldn't recommend doing like magazine styles in Illustrator at all, but I've also heard people using it. But what I would recommend doing is if it has multiple pages, do InDesign. If you're looking at creating a brand, a logo, any sort of like vector key images, do it in Illustrator.
And if you guys aren't sure what we mean by vector, so there's there's two different files for images. Basically, there's vector images or vector graphics, and then there's raster graphics. So the difference between the two is with raster graphics, as you move, like as you zoom in kind of on the file, eventually you're going to see pixels, and those are just like the little squares, dots that you'll see, and that's like the detail in the photo or whatever that basically your screen is showing you. Whereas with a vector, as you zoom in, you don't see any pixels, because what a vector graphic versus a raster graphic does is the vector graphic uses mathematical equations to create the drawing that you're putting into the computer. So it doesn't matter how small or how large you make it, it will never get pixelated.
Yeah, that's such a, you explain that so well. So
I just taught that to my class.
Oh, I'm like, you explain that so well.
Yeah.
So like, for example, like that's, so that's the main reason why I would recommend using that for printing and branding and everything, because let's say if you send that file off to a printer, they can manipulate it and change it for what they need to without it affecting what the actual image or the actual design looks like.
And to answer any questions about photographs, you can't make photographs vectors. They're rasters.
Right, and that would just make sense because you don't want to get rid of the pixels.
Well, and you can. Like, you can make a photograph into a vector by creating, like, an illustrated drawing of it, but you can't actually take a photograph and make it into a vector. Because some people are going to be like, well, why wouldn't you just make your vector, or make your photograph into a vector, and then we could print it up the size of our wall, and it wouldn't matter. It doesn't work like that.
It doesn't work that way.
So I just wanted to, let everybody know, yeah, you can't really do that with a photograph. What you can, however, do is, like, use a photograph to create a vector, which is, like, a whole other lesson.
Whole other thing.
You could probably go on YouTube and find something like that, but, yeah, I just want people to know that.
And so with all that...
Oh, actually, we have another Adobe program to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you go for it.
So for our podcast, we actually use an Adobe program. It's called Audition, and basically people can use it to record anything. You can also do like multi-tracks. So as you hear in our podcast, we have like the intro and the outro that would have been made through the multi-track with the mixing of the like sound and the voice over. But yeah, Audition is the program that we use for that. I believe there's another online version if you guys are interested in a different editing program for sound called Audacity, which you can use online.
I've heard that one before.
Yeah.
And if you, I know, so the London Public Library, and I'm sure actually most libraries, I don't know how it works with other libraries outside of London, but there's this fantastic program online. It's called Lynda. So if you go to lynda.com, you can actually log in through your library card, and it is actually like lessons on all of these things, and it's free through your library card. Otherwise, you have to pay for a subscription. I know YouTube obviously has some great tutorials, I'm sure, but Lynda is like an education, teaching-based online program, like online system. So it's actually like really, really great. They have so many things you can learn on that program or on that website. It's amazing. So lynda.com. But if all of this wasn't, is terrifying and scary, and there's a lot of words we use that you're like, oh my god, I just want to make a picture into something. There is a great program that I recommend to so many people. It's called Canva. It is exactly what we described. Mostly, it is really great on like a template standpoint, because they do offer templates for any design, logos, social media templates, posters, literally anything you can think of. Canva provides it as a template, and then you can actually create it. You can upload your own photos, change the fonts, change colors. They do have a great edition that you do have to pay for, and it's for business, and it allows you to upload fonts and upload branding guidelines, and there's tons of really great things in that way. A lot of premium features that they offer in terms of like other photos you can use and other additions that you can add on. So it's a great alternative to, I think Canva maybe is at the first standpoint if you like want to, you know, dabble into design and kind of play around with some features. Canva is a really great starting point, but if you're looking into getting, you know, a higher experience, higher level, higher technicality, you're going to be looking at Adobe Cloud.
Yeah.
Or Creative Cloud, sorry.
Creative.
Sure.
Yeah, Adobe Creative Cloud. You got it. Okay, we're on to our websites. Do you want me to talk about mine first?
Go for it.
Okay, so originally I started my website on WordPress, but I actually switched over to a program called Showit. It's I wouldn't say Showit's for everybody. It's really like a photography-based platform. So you can upload high-resolution photos. It will optimize for both like desktop viewing and mobile viewing, but basically it's a really user-friendly platform to create a website that you can basically either create from scratch, or you can get one of their templates to do it. But you can design it exactly how you want. So I don't have to use too much code on it. It's mostly like visual because I'm a visual person. I don't know that much about coding. So I can like create and upload fonts. I can upload photos. I can change colors. I can move it the way that I want. So if you've seen my website, it's made through a program called Show It. It's a subscription based. So you have to pay a certain subscription a month, and it depends on whether you want to like have blog optimization or if you want to have a blog as part of it. If you don't, then it's a lower cost, but if you do have a blog, then it's a bit more. But I would say anytime I've had like troubleshooting or I've had the message show it by the next, I would say usually it's within a couple hours, but 100% by 24 hours, I have a response with an answer from them, which I think is really great too, which when you're paying for a subscription, you kind of want to make sure there's going to be someone on the other end to help you. But I've really liked it. I don't really have any complaints whatsoever. Everything that I've done on it has worked really well. The only thing is I don't have anything that I'm currently selling through my website. Once you start selling through the website with a program like Show It, then you have to pay on top of that for something like Shopify or whatever. And that's where the costs come in, because then you're paying to like host your website on Show It, and then you have to pay for Shopify, which is like a separate site, and then you have to pay for like all these other things. So it just depends on like what you want to do on your website and what your intention for your website is.
And I think that's so important. So we use WordPress, and we have like an additional builder that we use called Divi, and Divi lets us do so much additional things that in a way is similar to Show It, but not as I can't move as many things around, but I have a lot of, I have a lot that I can do and can add and change just because that builder is like super, super magical. And then I can see it in both a tablet and a phone version. But I think that's like one of the top questions I get asked all the time. It's like, where should I be having a website? And this is like, it's such a funny question, because WordPress is not necessarily user friendly. It takes a bit, it's a bit of a learning curve, especially if you're self-hosted. So this is usually how I describe this interesting concept of like domains and hosting and platforms and all stuff, is I always think about it in the term of, in the sense of like a parking lot. So you have to think of like the parking lot as like the internet. And then your car is your domain, so that's like your URL. And then your hosting is the actual parking, like the parking lot. So the internet, which is your, where the parking lot is, it doesn't move. Mm-hmm. It like stays there forever. And then the parking lot that's on that space stays there, but you have to pay every single year for access to a parking spot into that structure. Mm-hmm. And then you have your domain, which moves, which can move on different hostings. Mm-hmm. There's GoDaddy, there's Bluehost, there's so many different hosting sites. Mm-hmm. But your domain, which you also have to pay for, which you also have to pay for your car, you can move, but you, if you pay for your hosting every single year, you have a spot on your hosting on the internet somewhere, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
I should mention also, so you use Bluehost, don't you, for your hosting?
Yeah.
I had Bluehost, but I actually preferred one called SiteGround.
Yeah.
But now that I'm using Show It, I don't have to host separately because it's hosted through Show It. So that's part, like, it, usually it's like a separate fee for hosting and domains, yes. And then WordPress and all of the different things. So with Show It, it's all kind of built into one.
Yeah. So there's like, so if you use like a WordPress, for example, so WordPress.org is considered like the self-hosted. So every year you'd be paying for your domain, which is like your customized URL. Mm-hmm. You'd be paying for your hosting, which is, for example, the GoDaddy, the SiteGround, the Bluehost that we're talking about, and then you'd be paying, so you're not paying for, like, your platform,
no.
But that platform can be WordPress. The other two that you hear a lot about is Wix and Squarespace, both of those very similar to the Show It platform, kind of the subscription, but you're paying every year, and they often are also your hosting, so you're just paying for your Show It, and then you're paying for your domain. Or you're paying for your Wix or your Squarespace. Honestly, the biggest difference between the two is Squarespace is very heavily based on photos and images.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have really high quality, really well taken photos in order to really utilize that platform correctly. WordPress, again, is quite a bit more challenging. And it all, because a lot of this comes down to whether or not you also want to have an e-commerce store,
mm-hmm.
for sure. But I could talk about this forever. But we use WordPress simply because it, WooCommerce, which is the e-commerce version of WordPress, is amazing. It has tons of flexibility in integrations that we use. And that's also why we use WordPress, is because the analytics, the search engine optimization, and the WooCommerce is just, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. The integrations with WooCommerce.
Yeah, and I should say with ShowIt, I think you can get a domain through ShowIt, but I have mine through Google Domains,
because mm-hmm.
that's one that we didn't mention, but it's also an option for yeah. people that are so looking for
it. I do think for ShowIt, if I remember when I was pricing everything out, for ShowIt, because you also have to pay for Shopify,
mm-hmm.
it can get very expensive if you have an online store.
Yes, it gets more expensive.
It gets quite expensive.
Store. Yeah.
But it just comes down to preferences.
Yeah, like, I would say that ShowIt I found more user-friendly than
WordPress.
Oh, 100%.
Like, if I could put, like, the ShowIt platform, like, how to create... Actually, WordPress just totally revamped their builder.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's, like, I haven't played with it yet because I love Divi, but, yeah, it'll be an interesting transition for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, communication. I'll let you take this one because I don't use this program.
Oh, my gosh. Slack. Okay, a lot of people know about Slack. Slack isn't like a new program. I know a lot of teams use it. We live and breathe Slack simply because with my team, it is so easy to communicate on, and it's so much easier than bogging down, whether it's sometimes we get stuck on our Instagram DMs, which is not a great place to land. We also don't want to bog up our emails at all, and we want to be able to we can search on Slack, which is like huge for keywords, but you can also upload files. And you can, so if I'm starting a conversation with Shona, for example, I can actually start a thread and it won't continue as like a DM messaging system. So it won't continue on the same page. It'll be like a separate thread that you can look at. And you can also have channels. So we have channels, for example, for resources, for events. We have a general one. We have a management one. We have a blog. We have one for each one of our clients. We have one for branding. So we can really dictate like what we're talking about based on the channels, and it just makes it so much easier to communicate and chat with a team. And it's because I think a lot of people have used it in terms of a team standpoint. It's also great for our interns as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't use it because I'd be talking to myself. I don't have a team.
You can come jump on ours.
Okay, so for communication, I kind of use a mix of two different email platforms. So I have Apple Mail, and I think I use that just because like it's easy integration between all the Apple products that I have.
Mm-hmm.
So I can hop on one and see it on there. But also because I was able to like link my email, personalized email, like hello@hutchinsandco.ca through that as well. You basically just put like where it's coming in from and where it's going out from. And then I was able to kind of customize my like header banner and then my personalization at the bottom, which I found I think you can do it through Google, but I just found it a little bit easier to do it on Apple Mail because I can like create a signature and it's all there and whatnot. But then we also use G Suite, and that's just because like we have everything on Google, you and I, and I even use it for like school too. So I've been through the whole Google routine. But also it's like, it links with my phone because I have a Samsung phone, even though mm-hmm. I use Apple, everything else I have an Android phone, and it's like a Google phone. So I use it through that too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the G Suite just made sense for us. So G Suite is just the business version of Gmail, but mainly because of the Drive. We live and breathe on the Drive, same with how we live and breathe in Slack. We have everything in the Drive, also because from the communication standpoint, you can access it anywhere. You can have it on your phones. You can easily send and share files, and you can comment and have conversations and leave notes and everything right on the actual documents themselves, which is so amazing, whether it is with a client or with a team or with each other, with you and I when we're planning projects. There's just so much that you can do on the Drive, and it is honestly one of those platforms where it's well known.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's easy for people to jump onto it. And honestly, I think it is quite user-friendly. It's basically just looking at folders like how you would look at them on a computer.
I should mention to you guys, if we were talking about hosting and stuff before, if you use SiteGround for hosting, you do actually get, like, a personalized email through it. Mm-hmm. I think, does Bluehost have that too?
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you don't have that option, like, if you're hosting through a different site or whatever and you're not getting a personalized email and you're still using, like, a ShonaHutchings@gmail.com as your, like, business email, G Suite, also, it's, like, $5 per email or per user, and you can create a personalized email. So that's how we get, like, Hutchings and hello@hutchingsandco.ca or hello@somethingsimple.co. So if you're wondering, that's kind of how you do it, and $5 really is, like, nothing in the grand scheme of things for a personalized email and hosting and drive and all of those things.
I will say it does look very professional on, like, a branding, mm-hmm. and branding and marketing standpoint. Something is to be said about that when you look at, like, a business card.
Or, like, contact
or
forms.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, like.
Or your contract. Yeah, it just shows that you're, like, putting that extra step in your business to have a separate email between, like, your personal life and your business life. And that you're, like, willing to spend the money to put it there. Yeah. Okay. We talked about Google Drive because that's part of G Suite. So Google Calendar.
Yeah.
You guys would be, like, afraid if you actually looked at what our Google Calendar looks like on a day-to-day basis.
It's pretty scary. Yeah. But in all honesty, if it's not on my calendar, it's not happening.
Oh, yeah.
And that is, like, a tried and true thing.
I'm so happy, too, that you can, like, set reminders so that it, like, will come up and tell you what to do because I always have to set them, like, okay, day before, tell me what I'm doing tomorrow, and then, like, an hour before, tell me what I'm doing because sometimes, yeah, I will just forget because you get so busy and into what you're doing that you really just need some sort of a, hey, you're supposed to do this in 30 minutes, and you're like, oh, yeah.
You're like, oh, okay.
Or an hour, depending on how long it took me to get there, but yeah.
I also find, too, like, with my Google Calendar, I use, like, the notes section mm-hmm. in each, like, event.
Yeah.
Quite a bit, more than I realized I did. And it's just kind of like a nice way to be able just to, okay, I'm going into a meeting, click on that, and I can review everything instead of having to, like, figure out, one, having a million documents all over the place. It's right in my calendar. I know I'm going to be looking at it, and it'll all be there when I go into meetings or chats with anyone.
Mm-hmm. We talked about pricing in the last episode, but something that I'm doing in 2019 is adding basically deposits for photography shoots, and there's a whole reason behind that, but when people will pay that, that's when they're guaranteed basically a spot on my calendar, and when I do that, I can actually send an invite to them so then they can put it on their calendar too.
Yeah,
so that, like, there's no forgetting and whatever, and the reminders will happen for both me and them. So I like Google Calendar for that too, because you can, like, invite different people to events. They can see the notes, mm-hmm. they know where they're supposed to meet you, etc.
Yeah,
it's also useful for my husband, so he knows what I'm working on. He
knows what's going on.
Yeah.
It's also something that, like, my team and I really appreciate because we know what everyone's doing, mm-hmm. like, any given day. A lot of the time, like, when we take on interns, a lot of them have school still. So when I know what their schedule is, I know, okay, like, she's in school, she's, like, in class right now, or she's got an event. Okay, I won't be messaging her or, like, tagging her or anything because, well, mm-hmm. I don't want to be bombarding her with 100 Slack messages or invites that she doesn't necessarily need right now, so it's awesome.
So you talk about MailChimp because I haven't really used it that much.
All right, friends, if you don't have a newsletter, it's time to get a newsletter.
I should do that in 2019. So
I always preach this, don't be afraid of sending out newsletters or having a newsletter set up for your business, because we all rely on social media so much, but if Instagram or Facebook was gone tomorrow, where is your audience? Like, how are you going to mm-hmm. connect with them? You don't own that those followers. Those followers are gone if those platforms are gone. So I always recommend having a newsletter, even if you just, like, have something like that on your website, or you direct people to them, or you're like, they're like, oh, I want to find out more. Okay, here, like, here's a link to my newsletter, because those people, like, you essentially, like, have their, it's like keepsies. Like, you have their emails. And you can export that list. So at the end of the day, like, I hate saying you own that list. Like, you do. That is your list.
It's your audience because they signed up to be your audience.
Exactly. And they're basically saying, like, I want to receive more information from you. So send it to me. So why aren't we taking advantage of that? And we use MailChimp as our like newsletter publishing system or software. It's just great. It's got templates, it's easy to use. I actually don't really use templates. I kind of just write it as if it was an email, because at the end of the day, like, people just want the information. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they even, like, well, something we're starting to do for 2019 is we'll actually, like, record video and send out the video, or audio, just because I think people, you know, like to, it'll be faster and easier for people to understand. But MailChimp is a really great one. I believe it's free up to 2,000 subscribers. So you're set. The analytics are great for it. So you can kind of read like what your open rate is, what your click rate, and all that. So those are always good analytics to be looking at. The other platform we hear a lot about is ConvertKit. I honestly haven't used that one. But from what I understand, it's also quite user-friendly. I know a lot of, like, corporations use that one.
Yeah, ConvertKit. Yeah.
ConvertKit, yeah. Oh, and my last communication tool that I wanted just to briefly touch on is called Zoom. It's a video conference program that you just use on your computer. And it's usually what I use for meetings, especially if it's not someone who's already in my Gmail contacts. If they are a part of my Gmail contacts, usually I'll just invite them to, like, a Google Hangout. But if it's someone who maybe we're meeting for the first time as a consultation, or it'll be, like, a bit of a longer chat, usually I'll just use Zoom. I've had a really good connectivity with Zoom, and it's also free. I believe if you only have, I think it's like 10 people on the video conference. So you do have to pay if you want to have more people, but I mean, 10 people at this point is pretty high number. But it's a great program to use. I do believe you have to download. No, you do. So you have to download like a program to actually use it. It'll ask you if it's your first time ever using it. It'll ask you if you want to download it. So that's kind of sometimes like, kind of not great, but I've never had an issue with it. So,
okay, we're on to finances. So, what are we using for our finances? I've been using it's just basically an online platform called Wave Accounting. So, it will allow you basically to make estimates, quotes, invoices. It will track kind of your income. You can accept online payments through it. You just have to basically like put in your banking information, and people can pay by credit card or bank payment, whatever they want. And it's a good way to track your finances if you are getting online payments specifically. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not going to necessarily track your cash flow if you're getting like actual like cash money. You would maybe have to put that in manually. I haven't really had that, so I haven't had to worry about it. But I'm actually considering switching over to QuickBooks. However, QuickBooks sounds really confusing, and I think I need to have a lesson on it, so I'm going to see about that. But I think Jenny's been using QuickBooks basically since like the beginning, so she can maybe chat more about that.
Yeah, so I switched over to QuickBooks over a year ago now,
mm-hmm.
and it is a game changer. So I do have a bookkeeper, and she's been great. She actually inputs all of my expenses. So this is kind of like what my process looks like at the end of every month. So I do all my invoicing out of QuickBooks. So at the beginning of the month, all my invoicing will go out. And then sometimes it's like from the previous month, but they'll all get sent out. All goes right through QuickBooks. So they get sent out, my clients get sent out an email. So all my clients are inputted into the program. And from there, at the end of the month, I have all of my invoices that I actually save all electronically. So a lot of my invoices are sent to me from email because a lot of the programs we use are online. So I actually just either save them as PDF, or sometimes it has to be a screenshot because it's just like an email. Those like email invoices I send you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I date them all, write in the actual like the title of the image. And then I usually write like, for example, if I'm getting my QuickBooks invoice, I'll write QuickBooks on it and I'll have the date that it was on my that was taken out of my account, and then it goes in a folder, and then I electronically send everything to my bookkeeper. So I could actually go a year without seeing my bookkeeper technically, because everything goes to her electronically. I scan all of like my paper invoices, which honestly I would recommend doing even if you don't have to electronically send them to anyone, because your invoices, the paper will actually like wear away at the ink, or the ink will wear away. So if for whatever reason you need them later on, maybe there's an audit or you need to like go back and take a look at something, they could be like impossible to read. Mm-hmm. So if you scan them and have an electronic version, it's always kind of a good idea. But I send everything to my bookkeeper electronically, and she actually inputs all my expenses and any additional things to my payroll and all my remittance fees, which is like my quarterly fee that I have to pay the government because I have an intern, or I have an account manager, I have a team, so I have to not only pay my staff, but I also have to pay the government to have staff. So there's all those kind of pieces to it. But honestly, it's just a really great thing to be able to see at the end of the month, kind of like what my income was, what my expenses were, what my accounts receivable was. So that's like things that were invoices that were sent out at the beginning of the month but haven't been paid by the end of the month. So having to send those like really scary emails, hey, this is now, you know, overdue. Although not that scary, because all I have to do is hit reminder email yeah. and it sends it for me. But it is, I think QuickBooks is a really great idea if you're expanding and you're growing and you have a lot of expenses and a lot of invoices coming in and out. It's just a really easy way to kind of keep track of everything. And when it comes to tax time, QuickBooks is magical. It is so helpful when it comes to that, especially if you're charging HST at this point. It's super, super helpful. Again, my bookkeeper is a magical human, and she helps me also with my taxes. So if you haven't heard from our previous podcasts, finances are not my favorite thing, but they're necessary. So mm-hmm. QuickBooks, magical. And then alongside my QuickBooks, I actually have a Monaris machine, which is like a debit machine, but it's one of the ones that it's similar to Square. So Square is a very well known app and I guess device. It's like a little tiny square. Now they've got the tap one.
Yeah.
But we actually have a Monaris one, and it's also the app that I can input invoices or input credit card information from clients that have given me access to that information. It's very similar to Square. It's just, it's Monaris, which yeah. I think is actually one most retailers use.
Yeah, like most of the like point of sale systems that they're like using
are Monaris.
Yeah, it's Monaris.
Yeah, but it works for me.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's my financing.
Yeah, so I think, is that all of our apps? Oh, I'm on the wrong thing here. Oh, jeez, we're both trying to click on it. Oh, marketing. Oh, shoot, we still have more. This is a long episode, but useful information. I thought we were done. Okay, marketing. Obviously, we both use Instagram, and that also is part of my business. So if you need help with Instagram, Jenny and I can both help you with that. But yeah, so for marketing, putting things out there on Instagram, we use Jenny. I think you use Pinterest probably more than me, and it's great for Pinterest. Like blogs. You can also on Pinterest like have it linked to the same thing, but create different pins, just so that like it's getting to more places and it looks different, but it's still reverting people back to the same account or like website that you want them to go to.
Yeah, on average for Pinterest, like if you have, say you have a blog post, you should be creating like 4 to 5 pins mm-hmm. for just that one blog post or that one link or whatever it is that you're trying to like refer people back to.
Yeah, with like a different hook or listing or something to like get them to go on it.
Yeah. It's also a really great way to like test it to see what works well for mm-hmm. what it is that you're trying to drive people to. So blog posts, resources, services, whatever.
Yeah, I think I have Twitter, but I think it's like I have a teacher Twitter, but I don't really use Twitter for my business because I don't really like need it.
Yeah, I have like such a love-hate relationship with Twitter, if I'm totally honest. They have great articles. Mm-hmm. They really do. I absolutely love Twitter, but I think Twitter is great for kind of just keeping up with trends. Twitter really is like a trend center. Too many T's. Twitter is a trend setter. Mm-hmm. And it's just great to see kind of what's trending and what's like a high focus for a lot of people. And so that's honestly a really great way to market, to know mm-hmm. kind of what's happening in your industry, what people are talking about. And then, of course, there's Facebook.
Yeah. I think my Facebook still says coming soon, so obviously I can't be an advocate for Facebook because I don't use it.
I think Facebook, yeah. Facebook definitely has its place. For marketing specifically, is great. Facebook groups are great. In terms of like joining Facebook groups and interacting in Facebook groups. And then if you are someone who heavily relies on events for your business, Facebook is a really, really great platform for that because you can have all your details and all your information right on the platform and be able to share it. Pinterest, definitely Pinterest. If your audience is only local, Pinterest is a lot harder because it is like, it's international.
Yeah.
If you're simply looking for traffic to a site, or maybe you use affiliate links on your blog posts so the links people can click on to buy things, or if you are someone who has services and resources and things in a shop that anyone in the world could buy, Pinterest is great for that. Instagram is all of the above. Instagram's great for everything. So we use, I know I use all four. I think it's important right now to note that as a business, you do not need to be on every single social media platform. That's just going to eat up time for you, and it's not really realistic. So choose one and master it, and then go on from there.
And it's also important to note that, like, yeah, you don't have to be on all of them because not all of them will serve your business.
Exactly. And not all of them will have your audience
here. Yeah.
Which I think is also, again, knowing your audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're just going to briefly touch on a couple honorable mentions that we have used previously in the past. Trello is one of them.
Trello is basically like a planning board. So if you guys go on it and you have ideas, you can basically do this now, like, just through like any sort of notes. But if you want to create different like column headings and you want to, it's basically like sticky notes and you can add links and point
add
form
links
check boxes. And
it's a very like intense system.
Mm-hmm. We used it for a little bit, Jenny and I, but we kind of got over it when we moved everything over to the drive. So we stopped using it.
Mm-hmm.
Planoly, or there's even Plan, P-L-A-N-N, is like really similar to Later. I think, have you used Plan at all?
No, I haven't used Plan.
Okay, but Planoly, I haven't used Plan either, I just know it's out there, but Planoly is basically similar to Later, the app that we were talking about for like scheduling social media posts. However, I found that when I used Plan, it was good for like looking at what your feed would look like, but it was harder to kind of schedule because it doesn't come up really with like a calendar like Later does on the desktop version. So if you can use Later as an app or on desktop, I would recommend using it on desktop because you get kind of like, you can see as a month your entire plan. You can also like drag it into what your actual feed will look like, your photos, and you can create captions, or you can kind of look on a week basis and it will give you like a time slot that you can kind of put it in. And depending on the membership that you have, it will actually show you like the best times to post based on the engagement on your feed too. So
I think that was the biggest difference for me with Planoly and Later, and I've used both, but I just found there was so much more I could do on Later that made it more efficient for us. Later also really listens to their audience.
Mm-hmm.
So they've updated their app multiple times since I've been using it, and it's only been good updates.
Yeah.
However, Later needs to get an affiliate program. I've said that a bazillion times. There's someone from Later emailed me and was like, what can we do to help you? And I'm like, get an affiliate program.
Yeah, guys, if you can imagine, if you guys all logged into Later right now and you started using it, Jenny and I could be getting paid, but no.
Not cool.
They're not doing it.
And the other two programs that I've used previously and honestly are great is one is CoSchedule, which is again another planning program. It's honestly probably best utilized with the larger subscription models because there's so much more you can do in them. But I just found that we were really utilizing Later most of the time, and it just didn't make sense for us to have both. But it is just another scheduling program. It's very high intensive for most, honestly, for marketing teams, I'm totally honest. Calendly is something that's great to use if you find that you're constantly booking meetings and having that like email thread where it's like, are you free on this day? Okay, what about Tuesday? Oh, you're not free? Okay, what about 5? And there's like 7-10 emails back and forth just to decide on a time. Calendly actually will sync with your calendar, like Google Calendar, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And it will show when you're available and when you're not available based on an availability that you set in Calendly. So if you're only available to book meetings on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you can choose that in Calendly, and then it will sync with your Google Calendar. So if I already have 3 meetings on Thursday, you can't book it on that day.
Yeah, and basically people can, like, just go to your Calendly. Like, you can either send them the link. So, like, say someone, like, emails you and they're like, hey, just wanted to set up a meeting with you, wondering when you're available. You can just, like, send them the link to your Calendly, and they can just log onto it and then just book themselves into that time. And then you don't have to, like, waste the time with those back and forth emails.
It sends you a reminder. Yeah. It sends them a reminder.
Yeah.
It just saves time. I found that I was actually managing the program more than it was helping me manage my time. Because it's with things changing all the time, just didn't make sense. But I can definitely see if you have a more structured schedule, how that would be super, super helpful.
If you're getting a deposit, like I would be for scheduling like photo shoots, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it either, because it's harder to manage knowing, because you're not like letting people log in. You're not basically telling them when they can and can't log in to book you. It's basically if you have that time available, they will book you at that time.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend it if you guys are, if you're getting a deposit of some sort, just to make sure that, like, you receive that deposit prior to the fact that they can actually go in your schedule.
And the moment you send them a link, typically they can always go back in and access it.
Yeah, and I think it allows them to change it too, doesn't it?
They can cancel
and then they can pick a different time, and it lets people, like, move around a bunch.
As long as they have the link, yeah. So it, for me, it didn't make sense. I'm sure that there are some rules that you can put into place based on that app. But it just didn't make sense on our end. But I'm sure it could be very, very helpful for other businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like if you have people just needing to book a meeting or whatever. Yeah, exactly. I found it helpful. I actually used it for kids to sign up for presentations in school.
I use it when I do interviews.
Yeah, that's good too.
Yeah.
Because then people are definitely committing to the time that they sign up for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than that, though, we don't use it.
Yeah. Okay, well, are we actually done now? Yeah. Okay. Wow, that was a long episode, but I guess we use a lot of different things to run our businesses.
Yeah, so that just kind of gives you an idea as to what the everyday kind of looks like for us in terms of our tools and what a month would consist of and everything that we're kind of using and going in and out of. But hopefully some of these you either haven't heard of before or you would be interested in learning more about. So if you have any other questions, feel free to shoot us a message on either one of our social media platforms, because I'm sure we would be happy to answer. Or in the comment in the show notes. So we'll be putting out show notes with links to literally every single one of these tools. So if you're interested in checking one of them out, feel free to click and learn more, or just comment on the show notes and we'll get back to you as soon as we can to answer your question.
Okay, I guess that's ta-ta for now. Yeah. We hope you learned something, and hopefully you guys find some of these tools useful. If you use any of these tools, we'd also like to know, or if you have one maybe that could be useful for us that we haven't heard of, just let us know.
Mm-hmm. And super exciting, we're going to be starting our guest speakers. I was like, no, you guys are listeners. Thanks for listening. No, we're going to be having our guest speakers starting this month as well. So if you are interested in being a guest speaker on our podcast, please reach out. We do have a form on both of our websites, which we'll have in the show notes as well. So feel free to reach out, because we would love to have other opinions on the show.
Yep. For sure. Okay.
All right. Thanks for listening.
That's all for episode 7.
That's all for this week's podcast with Jen Gall and Shona Hutchings. Tune in next week for more Nitty Gritty.